I'm John Bachelor. I welcome Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're going into orbit with Hubble, the most successful, I understand there's competition, NASA robot ever launched. Now, looking to the future of Hubble. Bob is the author of Universe in a Mirror, Hubble's biography. So, Bob, do we need another chapter on Hubble, the Methuselah of robots? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, it's an interesting thing that's been announced in the last few days. Hubble right now is partly in safe mode. They've got one instrument operating, but they are in the process of trying to bring the other instruments back from safe mode. And they're working at it, and they're going to be doing this instrument at a time, so it could be weeks before the telescope's entirely operational again. But even as they do that, and of course, remember, Hubble has very few redundancies anymore. Most of its backup units have died, and so any further equipment failures is really concerning, a big deal. But they announced in the last couple of days that NASA has extended the operational contract for running Hubble with the Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore, and it's extended it now through 2026. This contract is with both the Space Telescope Science Institute as well as a consortium of universities based in Washington. And so that contract's extended to 26, so that means NASA hopes to keep this going for at least another, five more years. That's what the hope is, John. And so let's keep our fingers crossed.
I understand. Not Dracula, Methuselah. We go to the surface of the moon. And something called a swirl, a lunar swirl, which NASA wants to investigate thanks to a private company. What is a lunar swirl, Bob?
They don't know. It's a natural feature that's found in a few spots on the moon. And so here's the deal. NASA's got, 7 different missions, unmanned lander/rover missions aiming for the moon in the next 3 years. And it awarded a new contract to a private company called Intuitive Machines, and this is the third contract they've given Intuitive Machines to put a lander on the moon, and in this particular case, that lander would have 4 science instruments from NASA to study this geological feature called a swirl, and they don't really understand what it is, but that's the mystery. So what I found interesting about this story is the list of these commercial missions. NASA has 7 of these missions, and it's got contracts with 1, 2, 3, 4 different landing companies. These are what the deal is, that private companies are building the landers. And what NASA does, and most private companies do, is they sell payload space to either NASA or other people. And so NASA has purchased payload space on four different companies, landers, for a total of 7 different missions. And so the first is supposed to go up. It's supposed to have gone up already. It was originally going to be launching on ULA's new Vulcan rocket, but that's delayed for many reasons. So that's one, but Intuitive Machines got another, and it's got 2 actually for next year. And then Firefly has one in 23, and then another company, Maston, has another one in 23. Astrobotic has got another one in 23, and that's a big one. It's going to land NASA's big Viper rover in the South Pole. And then finally, the contract they just awarded this week to Intuitive Machines to put 4 payloads down in that swirl. A lot of these missions are going to the South Pole. Some of them are going to other places on the moon just to study the science of the moon. The idea here is that private companies build the landers, own the landers, sell payload space to NASA and to others. And the idea, one of the reasons they have so many different companies getting contracts, is to develop a robust private competitive industry. We should not be surprised if some of these missions fail. They're going to. This is a new industry. It's got to learn how to do it. It's flex its muscles. But when all is said and done, we're going to have at least 2 or maybe 3 different companies capable of landing things on the moon, private companies, and they're making money doing it. And so that's a really good thing for the United States. That's for sure, John.
We go to the European Space Agency, a probe for the sun. Europe's solar orbiter. Is this the same, Bob, as the Parker solar probe from NASA?
No, these are two probes that are orbiting on the inner parts of the solar atmosphere inside the orbit of Mercury. Solar Orbiter doesn't quite get as far in because its mission is complementary to the Parker solar probe, which is getting very close, closer than any object ever gotten to the sun, man-made object. But the two missions are complementary, and they're both designed to study the sun's corona, its atmosphere, its solar wind, its magnetic field, the environment around the sun, close to the sun. Now, Solar Orbiter, I've talked about the Parker Solar Probe. It's made many already now frequent flybys of both the sun and Venus and the Earth as it shrinks its orbit in closer and closer to the sun. And it's now every flyby it does with the sun, it sets a new world speed record as well as closeness to the sun. Europe's Solar Orbiter is going to make its last flyby of the Earth on November 27th. When it does that, it's going to put itself into the proper orbit close to the sun where it can begin its science operations. Their press release makes a big deal about the risks going through the Earth near Earth space, because it's going to zip past the Earth 460 kilometers. What is that, about 300 miles above the surface? That's about the same elevation that ISS orbits. And so what you've got is the possibility that it might hit something. The odds are extremely tiny, but it exists. And so they make us aware of it anyway, John.
The UAE has boldly gone where no one has gone before. That is a rocket and a launch and discovery without what you say is a large infrastructure to get into space. They hire people to build these robots. And this robot in orbit of Mars is displayed what Bob describes as something that shouldn't surprise us, but it certainly does me. What am I looking at, Bob?
Well, the UAE's Al Amal Mars Orbiter, which Al Amal means hope in English, it's been orbiting Mars now for about 6-8 months, something like that. No, maybe getting closer to a year, not quite a year. And it's designed to study the global atmosphere of Mars. And it published a result recently, which I posted part of a graphic of this result. And what it has found, they say they've discovered what they call unexpected variations in the atmosphere of both oxygen and carbon monoxide in the Martian atmosphere. And the scientists with the UAE that published this data said it was expected that these molecules, or oxygen and carbon monoxide, would be evenly distributed throughout the atmosphere. And instead, they're finding variations. The graphic I have put up shows that there's a concentration of oxygen in the mid-northern latitudes. And I point out that we actually shouldn't be surprised by this, because the atmosphere of Mars is going to be influenced by the surface. And the Martian surface has this gigantic dichotomy between the southern crated highlands and the northern, the flat northern plains. And so what we're looking at, I think, is a reflection of that difference, John. And, of course, we don't understand why, but there's a link there somewhere. So it's a discovery, and good for the UAE.
Baikonur. What is Baikonur, Bob, and what does the UAE want with Baikonur?
Well, the UAE is, you know, pushing very hard to have a robust space program, and they have done stuff with the Russians, including you hired the Russians to launch one of their people into ISS in the last few years. Well, they've made a deal with the Russians to use private money. UAE is going to find private money to pay for the refurbishment and upgrading of the what the Russians call launch pad number one. It is the launch pad that they've been using for decades, and it was the launch pad that Yuri Gagarin launched into orbit in 1961. In a sense, it really is the longest used launch pad in the world. And, of course, the Russians have no money. And so the UAE has made a deal with the Russians and with Kazakhstan, which is where this is located in Baikonur, to refurbish that launch pad. And what I am suspecting is going on here is the agreement means UAE will pay for the refurbishment, find money to refurbish it, but in exchange it's going to have the right to launch things from that launch pad, not necessarily on a Soyuz rocket. That's what I think is going to happen. Or if it does launch on a Soyuz, it's going to be its own payloads and its own launches, and it'll be buying it at a cut rate. That I think, is what's going on here. It's good. It means UAE is looking for a launch pad to put things up, that it wants some independence from Russian control, and so using money to do that, John. It's kind of cool.
It occurs to me, Bob, that there is a monetization possibility here for tourism. This is the fundamental launch pad of man into space. And therefore, you know how they organize battlefield tours in Europe, First War, Second War? Organizing a manned space tour would be the future monetization of all of this that you're illustrating.
I mean, that would be a great idea from tourism point of view, just having people be able to tour the launch pads. But the Russians have not been very smart about this. They consider this a military site, and so they limit access to it much more than they should, really. But nonetheless, if the UAE gets involved and is paying money to fix it up, it gives them the clout to maybe open that up. That's one of the possibilities. It also opens up the possibility that they could fly their own tourist flights paid by them and earned, you know, them making the money. I mean, that's where I think this might be going.
I'm just looking at the picture of the Baikonur Cosmodrome's launch site, and imagining what a large group of men in robes would look like wandering around, pointing up and taking pictures with their iPhones. You know, now, Russians understand cash, Bob. They do.
Absolutely. And they might limit their own people from being tourists, but if someone's going to pay the money, they'll let the Sikhs from the UAE come and take a tour.
And there's travel agency business here, Bob, in order to get to Baikonur and visit the site. Now, all right, let's go to the surface of Mars, where the Russians, the UAE, and we're all pointing. You found another odd feature on the surface of Mars. This is a volcano. There are no live volcanoes on Mars, correct, Bob?
No. They don't think there's any active volcanoes on Mars. The one spot they think might have been active, the most recent, is like 50,000 years ago, but that's not confirmed. Most of the big volcanoes on Mars are thought to have been active more than a billion years ago, so it's a long time. But these were big volcanoes, and so I have, you know, when I see a picture that looks like a pit, you know my interest, I immediately focus on it. So this is a pit that looks like it's a volcanic vent on the southern flanks of the giant volcano Asiya Mons. And so I put together a mosaic of wide-angle pictures, and then I also brightened the image of the pit itself to see if we could see any holes at the base, and there really don't appear to be any. It doesn't have any voids. But nonetheless, this is giving a sense of the size of the volcanic activity. We're almost 350 miles here from the caldera of Asiya Mons, and yet this entire picture I've got here, you know, miles across, is a volcanic lava plain. This is all lava from the volcano. So on Mars, lava can travel very far, very fast, and very quickly across very large expanses.
Is there the suggestion that there's a lengthy tube here, Bob?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There sure is. I mean, the mosaic picture shows this meandering series of depressions that seem to align up, and so that suggests the possibility of voids underneath. My thinking here is that they're probably filled underneath. They've been filled, but we don't know that for sure.
Future city or future excavation project. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going space engineering. This is CBSI on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.